took her statue of Azuli and pressed it into my hand.
"My heart, it weeps like a river," she said, "for the pain we have caused you."
I held the statue against my chest as I cried in the night. I thought I heard my grandmother crying too, but it was the rain slowing down to a mere drizzle, tapping on the roof. The next morning I went jogging along the road, through the cemetery plot and into the hills. The sun had already dried some of the puddles from the drizzle the night before. Along the way, people stared at me with puzzled expressions on their faces. Is this what happens to our girls when they leave this place? They become such frightened creatures that they run like the wind from nothing at all. Chapter 24. 3 days later, my mother came. When I first caught a glimpse of her, she was sitting on the back of a cart being pulled by two teenage boys. Eliab raced to the yard, grabbed my grandmother's hand, and yanked her towards the road. My mother was shielding her face from us, hiding behind a red umbrella. My grandmother followed Eliab to the edge of the road.
"That lady," Eliab said, pointing at the umbrella, guarding my mother's face. "That lady, she says she belongs to you."
Tanta T was in the yard boiling some water for our morning coffee. She got up quickly when my grandmother started screaming my mother's name.
"Mi Martin! Tololo! Tololo!"
Eliab chimed in as though it was his long-lost mother who had come back. My grandmother grabbed her broom and speared it in the ground to anchor herself. My mother folded the red umbrella and laid it on top of a large suitcase on the cart next to her. Some of the road vendors gathered around her to say hello. My mother kissed them on the cheek and stroked their children's heads. They looked curiously at her cerise jumper, ballooned around her small frame. My grandmother was trembling on the spot where she was standing. Tanta T put her hands on her hips and stared ahead. She did not look the least bit surprised. A plantain green scarf floated in the breeze behind my mother. She skipped through the dust and rushed across the yard. Eliab circled around her like a wingless butterfly. My mother walked over and kissed my grandmother. Tanta T moved slowly towards her, not particularly excited. My mother was glowing. Tanta T tapped her lips against my mother's cheeks, then went back to fanning the cooking sticks with my grandmother's hat.
"Sak passé à ti?" asked my mother.
"You," answered Tanta T, fanning the flames. "You are what's new."
I clung to the porch railing as my anchor. It had been almost 2 years since the last time we saw each other. My mother's skin was unusually light, a pale mocha, 3 or 4 shades lighter than any of ours. Brigitte's body tightened, as though she could sense the tension in mine.
"I see you still wear the day," my mother said to my grandmother. "It is all the same," answered my grandmother. "The black is easier. It does not get dirty."
"Mon Dieu, you do not look bad for an old lady," said my mother.
"And you have been talking about arranging your funeral like it was tomorrow." "Your skin looks lighter," said my grandmother. "Is it produit? You use something?"
My mother looked embarrassed.
"It is very cold in America," my mother said. "The cold turns us into ghosts." "Papa Shango, the sun here, we'll change that," my grandmother said.
"I am not staying long enough for that," my mother said. "When I got your telegram, I decided to come and see Sophie and take care of your affairs at the same time. I planned to stay for only 3 days. This is not the visit I owe you. This is just circumstance. When I come again, I will stay with you for a very long time."
I watched her from the railing. waiting for her to look over and address me personally. She looked very young and thin, but for the most part healthy. Because of the roomy size of her jumper, I couldn't tell whether or not she was wearing her prosthetic bra.
Sophie, walk to your mother,
said my grandmother. They were all staring at me, even Eliab. My mother put her hands in her pockets. She narrowed her eyes as she tried to see my face through the sun's glare. Brigitte began to twist in my arms. She sensed something.
Sophie, walk to your mother.
My grandmother's voice grew more forceful. My mother looked uncomfortable, almost scared. I did not move. We stared at each other across the yard, each waiting for the other to yield. As her daughter, I was expected to walk over and greet her first. However, I did not trust my legs. I wasn't sure I could make it down the steps without slipping and hurting both myself and Brigitte.
Walk to your mother.
My grandmother was becoming angry. It is okay, my mother said, coming towards me. I will walk to her. She climbed onto the porch and kissed me on the cheek. Brigitte reached up to grab a large loop earring on my mother's right lobe. You didn't send word you were coming, I said. Let me see her, she said, extending her hands for Brigitte. Brigitte leaned forward. I let her slip into my mother's grasp. How old is she now? She asked. Almost 6 months. She made funny faces at Brigitte.
I got all the pictures you sent me, she said.
Why didn't you answer?
I couldn't find the words, she said. How are you?
I've been better. She went back to the yard to pay the cart boys and took Brigitte with her.
You're not staying here, are you?
She asked when she came back to the porch. She tickled Brigitte's armpits as she spoke, giggling along with her. I reached for my daughter. She pressed Brigitte's body against her chest and would not give her back.
Maman asked me to come here and make things better between us. It's not right for a mother and daughter to be enemies. Maman thinks it puts a curse on the family. Besides, your husband came to me and I could not refuse him. I've seen him. Oh, the flames in your eyes.
How is he?
Worried. I told him we would be back in 3 days.
You can't make plans for me.
I did.
We were speaking to one another in English without realizing it.
Oh, that clink-clank talk, interrupted my grandmother. It sounds like glass breaking.
Brigitte was pulling at my mother's earrings. My mother took them off and handed them to me.
You and I, we started wrong, my mother said.
You are now a woman with your own house. We are allowed to start again. The mid-morning sky looked like an old quilt, with long bands of red and indigo stretching their way past drifting clouds. Like everything else. Eventually even the rainbows disappeared. Chapter 25. My mother changed into a sundress to parcel out what she had brought. Under the spaghetti straps, I could see the true, unbleached ebony shade of her skin. In contrast, her face looked like the palm of a hand. My grandmother reached over and cupped her hands over my mother's prosthetic bra.
Do they hurt? Asked my grandmother.
No, my mother answered, because they are not really part of me. She had brought cloth for Tante T, packaged rice and beans and packaged spices for my grandmother. I got the diapers and underclothes that Joseph had sent for the baby, along with some t-shirts and shorts for me.
If you were not such a stubborn old woman, my mother said to my grandmother, I would move you and that tea to Croix des Rosettes or the city. I could buy you a bougainvillea.
You would have electricity and all kinds of modern machines.
I like myself here, said my grandmother. I need to see about the papers for this land, and I need to have all the things for my passing. With all my children here, this is a good time.
Tanta T was writing in her notebook. My mother leaned over to look. Tanta T pulled her notebook away and slammed it shut.
We will see the notary about the land papers, said my grandmother. We will do it tomorrow.
What will you do with the land? Asked Tanta T.
I want to make the paper show all the people it belongs to.
Tanta T did not go to Louise's house, but spent the evening in the yard staring at the sky. My mother could not sleep. She went outside and sat with Tanta T. They looked up for a long time without saying a word. Finally, my mother said,
Do you remember all the unpleasant stories Mama used to tell us about the stars in the sky?
My favorite, said Tanta T, was the one about the girl who wished she could marry a star and then went up there and as real as her eyes were black, the man she wished for was a monster.
A T, you remember everything.
I liked what Papa said better. He thought, Papa, that the stars were brave men.
Maybe he was right, my mother said.
He said they would come back and fall in love with me. I wouldn't say that was right.
We used to fight so hard when we saw a star wink. You said it was winking at you.
I thought it was winking at me.
I think Mama, she told us that unpleasant story about the stars to stop the quarrels.
Young girls, they should be allowed to keep their pleasant stories,
Tanta T said.
Why don't you sleep in your bed? Asked my mother.
Because it is empty in my bed.
You had men who came to ask for your hand.
Until better women came along.
How could you not be chosen? You are Atikako.
Atikako to you. Special to no one.
You were so beautiful, Ati, when you were a girl. Papa, he loved you best.
I have then the curse of a girl whose papa loved her best.
Tanta T rubbed the scar on the side of her head. They looked up at the sky and pointed to a blinking star.
You can keep the brightest ones, said Tanta T. When you are gone, I will have them all to myself.
We come from a place, my mother said, where in one instant you can lose your father and all your other dreams.
Chapter 26. My mother and grandmother left early for the notaries. Tanta T was not in her room. Eliab was playing with pieces of brown paper, stuffing them with leaves to make cigars. I called him to buy me some milk from the market.
The new lady, he said. Does she belong to you?
Sometimes I claim her, I said. Sometimes I do not. I gave him some money to buy me some goat milk from the market. He came back with some milk in a cut-off plastic container and a large mango for himself.
That young fellow, he wants to marry your daughter,
my grandmother said as she and my mother walked into the yard. Eliab looked embarrassed.
Does that fellow know?
My mother laughed.
My daughter has a very old husband.
My mother was carrying a few large bundles. I had never seen my grandmother so happy. My mother was glowing.
We are now landowners, my mother said. We all now own part of La Nouvelle d'Amarie.
Did this land not always belong to you and Tanta T? I asked my mother.
Yes, but now you have a piece of it too.
She flashed the new deed for the house.
La terre sera également divisée,
she read from the document.
Equally, my dear.
The land is equally divided between Ati and me and you and your daughter.
My grandmother pulled out a dressy church hat that she had bought for Tontati.
Sunday we go to the cathedral, said my mother. We meet Maman's priest.
My mother kissed the bottom of Brigitte's feet.
Where is Ati? Asked my mother. I got her a hat that will make her look downright chic.
She went out, I said.
The gods will punish me for Ati's ways,
my grandmother moaned. Tontati kept her eyes on the lantern on the hills as we ate dinner that night. She was squinting, as though she wanted to see with her ears like my grandmother.
I look forward to the mass on Sunday, my grandmother said, breaking the silence. I want that young priest, the one they call of Allah. I want him to sing the last song at my funeral.
Brigitte shook the new rattle that my mother had brought her. My grandmother took Brigitte from me and put a few rice grains in her mouth. My daughter opened her mouth wide, trying to engulf the rice. Tante T walked up the steps and went back to her room.
I don't know, my grandmother said. Her mood changes more than the colors in the sky. Take her with you when you return to New York.
I have asked her before, my mother said. She wants to be with you.
She feels she must, my grandmother said. It's not love. It is duty.
Everything was rustling in Tontati's room, as though she were packing. She was mumbling to herself, so I dared not peek in. In the yard, my mother and grandmother were sitting around the table, passing my grandmother's old clay pipe back and forth to each other.
Maman, will you know when your time comes to die? My mother asked sadly.
The old bones, they will know.
I want to be buried here when I die, my mother said.
You should tell Sophie. She is your daughter. She will respect your wishes.
I don't want much, my mother said. I don't want a mass like you. I want to be buried the day after I die, just like the old days when we kept our dead home.
That is reason for you and Sophie to be friends, my grandmother said. She can carry out your wishes. I can help. But she is your child.
My mother paced the corridor most of the night. She walked into my room and tiptoed over to my bed. I crossed my legs tightly, already feeling my body shivering. I shut my eyes and pretended to be asleep. She walked over to the baby and stood over her for a long time. Tears streamed down her face as she watched us sleep. The tears came harder. She turned and walked out. My mother walked into the room at dawn while I was changing Brigitte's diapers.
Are you all right? I asked.
Fine, she said.
Do you still have trouble sleeping?
I tried to be polite.
It's worse when I am here, she said.
Are you having nightmares?
More than ever, she said.
My old sympathy was coming back. I remembered the nightmares. Sometimes I even had some myself. I was feeling sorry for her. I thought it was my face that brought them on, I said.
Your face?
Because I look like him, my father. A child out of wedlock always looks like its father. She seemed shocked that I remembered.
When I first saw you in New York, I must admit, it frightened me the way you looked. But it is not something that I can help. It is not something that you can help. It is just part of our lives. As a woman, your face has changed. You are a different person. Besides, I have always had nightmares, every night of my life. It was just stronger then, because that was the first time I was seeing that face.
Why did you put me through those tests? I blurted out.
If I tell you today, you must never ask me again.
I wanted to reserve my right to ask as many times as I needed to. I was not angry with her anymore. I had a greater need to understand, so that I would never repeat it myself.
I did it, she said, because my mother had done it to me. I have no greater excuse. I realized standing here that the two greatest pains of my life are very much related. The one good thing about my being raped was that it made the testing stop. The testing and the rape. I leave both every day.
You're not dressed yet?
My grandmother was standing in the doorway.
I am ready to go.
My mother placed her hand on my grandmother's shoulder and signaled for her to wait. She turned back to me and said in English, I want to be your friend, your very, very good friend, because you saved my life many times when you woke me up from those nightmares. My mother went to my grandmother's room to dress, and soon they left for the road. They came back a few hours later with a pan full of bloody pig meat. In our family, we had come to expect that people can disappear into thin air, all traces lost except in the vivid eyes of one's memory. Still, Tante T had never thought that Louise would leave her so quickly without any last words. That night, Tante T had a glazed look on her face as she ate the fried pork.
Forgive me if I don't go to Mass ever again. I will choke on the communion if I take it angry.
Louise had sold her pig, taken my grandmother's money, and left the valley, without so much as a goodbye to Tante T. Chapter 27. I asked Tante T if Brigitte and I could sleep in her room with her the night before we were to return to New York. We put down some sheets on the floor and stretched out with the baby between us. Tante T turned her back to the wall as though she did not want me to see her cry. We heard my mother pacing the front room's floor back and forth, waiting for the sun to rise. Louise would have found her money somehow, some way, I told Tante T. She would have done anything to make that trip. Sometimes, when people have something they want to do, you cannot stop them, even if you want to.
I was a fool to think she was my friend, Tante T said.
Money makes dogs dance.
At least she taught you how to read your letters.
Anyone could have taught me that. A lot of good letters will do me now.
Sometimes I wish I could go back in time with you, to when we were younger. She closed her eyes, as though to drift off to sleep.
The past is always the past, she said. Children are the rewards of life, and you were my child.
The next day, Tante T led the cart that took my mother's and my bags to the marketplace. The sun was shining in Tante T's eyes as she carried my daughter for me. My grandmother and my mother had their arms wrapped around one another's waists, clinging as though they would never see each other again. When we got to the van that would take us to Port-au-Prince, my grandmother just stepped back and let go. My mother kissed her on both cheeks and then walked over and kissed Tante T. Tante T tapped my mother's shoulder and whispered for her to be careful. As Tante T handed me my daughter, she said,
Treat your mother well. You don't have her forever.
My grandmother tapped the baby's chin.
The face is in this child, she said, fighting back her tears.
My mother paid the top-top driver for us to have the van all to ourselves. It was all ours, except for the old hunchback, whose charcoal bags had already been loaded on it. Tante T was standing under the red flamboyant tree, clinging to a low branch as the van pulled away. Slowly, everything in La Nouvelle Dame Marie became a blur. My grandmother and the vendors. Tante T at the flaming red tree. They macoute around Louise's stand. even the hill in the distance, the place that Tontati called Guinon. A place where all the women in my family hope to eventually meet one another. At the very end of each of our journeys. Part 4 Chapter 28 It was a rocky ride to the airport. The old hunchback lowered her body onto a sack of charcoal to sleep, as though it were a feather mattress. My mother kept her eyes on the barren hills speeding outside the window. I wished there were other people with us. Chadi Madon Saraz, vendors, to add some teeth-sucking and laughter to our journey. My mother reached over and grabbed the cloth bells on Brigitte's booties. Sadly, ignoring the skeletal mares and even bonier women tugging their beasts to open markets along the route. In the city, we were slowed down by the heavier traffic. My mother looked closely at the neon signs on the large pharmacies and American-style supermarkets. The vans hurried up and down the avenues and made sudden stops in the middle of the boulevards. My mother gasped each time we went by a large department store, shouting the names of places she had visited in years past. The old hunchback got off at the iron market in Port-au-Prince. A few men with carts rushed to help her unload her charcoal bags from the roof. She waved goodbye to us as the van pulled away. "Find peace," she said, chewing the end of an unlit pipe. "Find peace, you too," answered my mother. Brigitte grabbed my blouse when she woke up. While I changed her diaper, my mother held my back and her head as though she was afraid that we would both crash if she let go. Brigitte slept peacefully through the rest of the trip. "She's a good child," my mother said. "Comme une poupée. It's as if she's not here at all." The airport lobby was crowded with peddlers, beggars, and travelers. We tried to keep up with the driver as he dashed towards a short line with our suitcases. My mother had no trouble at the reservation desk. Our American passports worked in our favor. She bribed the ticket seller $20 to change us into seats next to each other. I looked up at the murals on the high airport ceiling once more. The paintings of Haitian men and women selling beans, pulling carts, and looking very happy at their toil. My mother's face looked purple on the flight. She left to go to the bathroom several times. When she came back, she said nothing, just stared at the clouds out the window. The flight attendant gave her a pill, which seemed to calm her stomach. "Is it the cancer again?" I asked. "It's my discomfort with being in Haiti," she said. "I want to go back there only to be buried." She picked at the white chicken they served us for lunch, while I gave Brigitte a bottle. "You don't seem to eat much," she said. "After I got married, I found out that I had something called bulimia," I said. "What is that?" "It's when you don't eat at all, and then eat a whole lot. Binging." "How does that happen?" she said. "You are so tiny, so very petite. Why would you do that? I've never heard of a Haitian woman getting anything like that. Food. It was so rare when we were growing up, we could not waste it." "You are blaming me for it," I said. "That is part of the problem." "You have become very American," she said. "I am not blaming you. It is advice. I want to give you some advice. Eat. Food is good for you. It is a luxury. When I just came to this country, I gained 60 pounds my first year. I couldn't believe all the different kinds of apples and ice cream. All the things that only the rich eat in Haiti, everyone could eat them here, dirt cheap. When I saw you for the first time, you were very thin. I had just gotten my breasts removed for the cancer. But before that, before the cancer, in the beginning, food was a struggle. To have so much to eat and not to eat at all,
It took me a while to get used to the idea that the food was going to be there to stay. When I first came, I ate the way we used to eat at home. I ate for tomorrow, and the next day, and the day after that, in case I had nothing to eat for the next couple of days. I ate reserves. I would wake up and find the food still there, and I would still eat ahead anyway.
So it is not so abnormal that I have it, I said.
You are different, but that's okay. I am different too.
I want things to be good with us now. My daughter was asleep by the time we landed in New York. My mother got our suitcases while I waited in the lobby.
Will you spend the night at home before you go back to Providence? She asked, struggling with our bags.
I told her I would.
Don't you have someone you can call to pick us up? I asked.
The only person you have to count on is yourself, she said.
We took a cab back to Nostrand Avenue. I looked around the living room while she listened to the messages on her answering machine. There was still red everywhere. Even the new sofa and love seat were dark red velvet. Most of her messages were from Mark. His voice sounded softer than I remembered it.
T'es retourné?
Are you back?
Call me as soon as you get back. Je t'aime.
He even sounded excited on the I love you. She moved closer to the machine, blocking my view of it, as though he were there in the flesh, and she was standing with him and they were naked together. I walked up the red carpeted stairs to my old room. Aside from the bed, the room was completely bare. She'd removed all the jazz legend posters that Joseph had given me. On the far end of the wall was the sketch of her and me at Coney Island. The sketch emphasized the merry-go-round, but shrunk us in comparison, except for our hands, which seemed like the largest parts of our bodies. My old bed no longer creaked when I sat on it. My mother had fixed the noisy springs that had made it so much fun, so musical. Her messages still echoed from downstairs. A final declaration of love from Mark, and then one of her friends asking where she was. I opened my old closet. It too was empty. I went to the guest room where she had a desk and a cot to do her reading and sewing. She had said that she would make it more homelike if ever my grandmother or Tante T decided to come for a visit. The bed in her reading and sewing room squealed when I sat on it. My daughter liked the sound and laughed as we bounced up and down on it.
Some things never change, my mother said, watching us from the doorway.
I think we'll sleep here, I said.
And your room?
The mattress there is too stiff.
You can have my room, she said.
Don't worry. It's only for one night.
What about the baby?
She'll be okay with me.
You are wondering what I've done with your things, aren't you? She asked.
I don't need those things anymore.
I am sorry.
Please don't be sorry. I can always get others.
I was passionately mad, she said.
And you burnt them?
In a very frustrated moment, yes. I was having an anxiety attack and I took it out on those clothes.
Better on the clothes than on yourself, I said.
In spite of what I've done to you, you've really become an understanding woman, she said. What do you want for dinner? We'll have no more of that bulimia. I'll cure it with some good food.
It's not that simple.
Then what are you supposed to do?
For now, I eat only when I'm hungry.
Are you hungry now? She asked.
Not now.
You didn't eat on the flight.
Okay, I gave in. I'll eat whatever you make.
I need to go out after dinner, she said. It's very important. Otherwise, I wouldn't lose this time with my daughter and granddaughter.
We'll be fine. I gave Brigitte a bath in the tub while my mother cooked spaghetti for dinner. The cooking smells of the house had changed. We ate at the kitchen table, watching through the low windows as a little girl skipped rope under a hanging light in a neighbor's yard. Brigitte tried to dig her pacifier into my plate. I cut off a strand of spaghetti and put it in her mouth. "After you left home," she said, "the only thing I ate was spaghetti. I would boil it and eat it quickly before I completely lost my appetite." Everything Asian reminded me of you. It didn't have to be that way. I didn't realize you would call my bluff. I thought you would come back to me humiliated. She got up and cleared the table, leaving my full plate of spaghetti in front of me. "I have to go now," she said. "Are you still seeing Mark?" I asked. "I want him to have dinner with you and your husband soon." "So you're still seeing him?" "Very much seeing him." "Are you going to marry him?" "I have not even told Mama and Ati about him. At this point in my life, wouldn't it be senseless for me to marry?" She grabbed her purse and started for the door. "The sooner I go out, the sooner I can come back. I won't be long. If my phone rings, you can pick it up." I dialed my home number from the living room phone. The answering machine picked up after the third ring. I heard my own voice joyfully announcing that you've reached the Woods residence for Joseph, Sophie, and Brigitte. Please leave a message. I hung up quickly, not sure what to say to myself. I called again a few minutes later and left a message. "Joseph, I'm back from Haiti. I'm in Brooklyn at my mother's. Please call me." I left her number. He called back a few minutes later.
"What's up?"
he asked, as though we were just having a casual conversation. "I'm okay. And you?"
"Fine. Except my wife left me."
"I'm back. I'm at my mother's," I said.
"Is Brigitte okay?" he asked. "Can I speak to her?"
Brigitte grabbed the phone with both hands when I put it against her face.
"Is she okay?"
he asked. "She's fine."
"And you?"
"Good."
"Sophie, what were you thinking?"
"I'm sorry. Is this how we're going to handle all our problems?
I was afraid something awful had happened to you. I call at all hours, and you're never there. When I rush back to Providence, all I get is a note. Sorry, I needed to go somewhere and empty out my head."
"I wasn't away very long."
"What if your mother hadn't gone back for you? Wouldn't you have stayed longer?"
"I'm back now, aren't I?"
"Then what if you feel like leaving again?" he asked.
"Can we please talk about that later?"
"Are you coming home?"
"Yes."
"To stay?"
"What do you think?"
"I don't really know," he said.
"What is it? What did I do, Sophie?" "You know my problems."
"The therapy, that's helping you."
"I don't think it is."
"You'll have to start over, but you're okay."
"I don't feel okay."
"You're a beautiful woman, it's natural. You're desirable. Nothing is wrong with that."
"But we can't even be together."
"That's all right. I told you after the baby was born, as long as it takes, I will wait."
"But what if I never get over it? What if I never get fixed?"
"You're not a machine. You can't go to a shop and get fixed. It will happen slowly. I've always told you this, haven't I? I will be there for you."
"Why didn't you answer the phone the first time?" I asked.
"I was practicing," he said. "Should I drive down and get you?"
I told my mother I'd spend the night here with her. "I'll rent a car and drive home tomorrow."
"All this traveling. Isn't it rough on Brigitte?"
"She's got Kakko blood. She's a strong one. She'll be fine."
"I want you to have the pediatrician check her out the minute you get home."
"I will."
"How's your mother?"
"She wants us all to have dinner with her male friend soon."
"You mean her boyfriend?"
I suppose. I wouldn't have guessed that you went to Haiti. I wouldn't have known at all if it weren't for her. I was going to fly down to get you, but she wanted to find you herself.
She didn't find me. I wasn't lost.
You know what I mean.
I know. My mother can be very overwhelming sometimes.
She wanted to see you very badly. Did you work things out?
We talked, I said.
Is she home? I'd like to thank her.
You can thank her when you see her.
And when will I see you?
He asked. Tomorrow.
Are you sure?
Yes.
There will be no pressure or anything, he said. I promise you.
He wanted to hear Brigitte one more time. I tickled her feet and she laughed on cue.
Does she speak Creole?
He asked. She didn't speak very much.
She might have said daddy and I missed it.
She didn't.
Is she walking on her own?
We've only been away a few days.
It seems like ages. Does she still reach for people's food?
She does that.
Can I come for you? I'll drive down there right now.
It's better for me if I find my own way back. I'm the one who left. I should come back myself.
I laid out a comforter in the guest room. I put the baby down on the guest bed, surrounded by four large pillows. My mother walked in to check on us when she came home.
Is everything all right? She asked.
Fine, I said. How was your visit?
I went to see Mark.
Her voice cracked. I had something to tell him.
Was it good? Was it bad?
Depends on how you look at it. Did you call your husband?
Yes.
He will be happy to see you.
She cradled the door as though she wasn't sure what to say next.
The baby? She's okay?
Fine, I said.
Well, good night.
Chapter 29. Breakfast was plentiful. All the things that made me feel most guilty when I ate them. Bacon and eggs and extremely sweet café au lait.
I thought you would be hungry, she said, on the road to recovery. How can you resist all this food?
It's not as simple as that. I had a piece of toast while my mother gave my daughter her formula. She looked like she hadn't slept much. The eggplant shade came back to her skin, as it always did before she applied her skin-bleaching creams.
You didn't look very happy when you came home last night, I said.
Someone like me? You see me happy, you know I'm pretending, she said.
Is something wrong?
Brace yourself. I know you are not going to believe what I have to tell you. Sophie, your mother is pregnant.
Pregnant? I stuttered.
Mark and I, we have...
You sleep together?
She nodded, looking ashamed.
How far along are you? I asked.
A month or so.
Are you going to marry him?
Oh, Jesus, Marie-Joseph. Am I going to do what?
Doesn't he want to marry you?
Of course he wants to marry me, but look at me. I am a fat woman trying to pass for thin, a dark woman trying to pass for light, and I have no breasts. I don't know when this cancer will come back. I am not an ideal mother.
Brigitte wrapped her arms around my mother's neck as my mother burped her.
What are you going to do? I asked.
That's what I don't know. What does Mark want? It's my decision. Supremely, it's mine. I am very scared. I don't know. The nightmares, they're coming back.
In La Nouvelle Dame-Marie, it didn't seem like you slept at all.
Whenever I'm there, I feel like I sleep with ghosts. The first night I was there, I woke up pounding at my stomach.
What are you going to do about the baby?
I don't know.
You can marry Mark and have the baby.
and repeat my great miracle of being a supermother with you. Oh, some things one should not repeat. Think of it as a second chance. I've had the second chance of my life by being spared death from this cancer. I can't ask too much. Do you love Mark?
I think I love him. Since you left, he stays with me at night and wakes me up when I have the nightmares.
You still won't go for help?
I know I should get help, but I am afraid. I am afraid it will become even more real if I see a psychiatrist and he starts telling me to face it. God help me, what if they want to hypnotize me and take me back to that day? I'll kill myself.
Mark, he saves my life every night. But I'm afraid he gave me this baby that's going to take that life away.
You can't say that. The nightmares. I thought they would fade with age. But no, it's like getting raped every night. I can't keep this baby.
It must have been much harder then, but you kept me.
When I was pregnant with you, Mama made me drink all kinds of herbs. Vervain, quinine, and verbena, baby poisons. I tried beating my stomach with wooden spoons. I tried to destroy you, but you wouldn't go away.
She reached over and handed Brigitte back to me.
When I was carrying you, you were brave, she said. You wanted to live. You wanted to taste salt, as my mother would say. You were going to kill me before I killed you.
What are you going to do about this one?
She's a fighter too. She's already fighting me.
Do you know that it's a girl?
I don't know. I never want to know. I think it's a girl because you ended up being a girl. I can't go through night after night of the next few months living these nightmares that same way again.
Are you going to take it out?
She crossed herself. Oh, Jesus, Marie-Joseph. Every time I even think of that, the nightmares get worse. It bites at the inside of my stomach like a leech. Last night, after I talked to Mark about letting it go, I felt the skin getting tight on my belly, and for a whole minute, I couldn't breathe. I had to lie down and say I had changed my mind before I could breathe normally.
Have you seen a doctor?
I know. These things, they sound crazy to me too, but maybe that's what it wants. To drive me crazy.
You should talk to someone. Someone other than Mark. Someone outside the whole situation.
I am trying to keep one step ahead of a mental hospital. They would probably put me away, thinking that I might hurt both myself and this child.
When you and Mark are together, do you have the nightmares then?
I pretend. It is like eating grapefruit. I was tired of being alone. If that's what I had to do to have someone wake me up at night, I would do it. But never in my life did I think I could get pregnant.
You didn't use birth control?
She laughed through her tears. I would have never imagined we could be having this conversation. Maybe if I spend more time with you, I will want this baby. I would want this child if the nightmares weren't so bad. I can't take them. One morning, I will wake up dead.
Don't say that.
You will leave today, she said.
I can stay longer if you need me.
Your husband. I know he will be anxious to see you. I can ask him to drive down, and he will stay with us for a couple of days.
No, no. I'll deal with this. Mark will come and stay here with me.
Why don't you just marry him?
Because you don't marry someone to escape something that's inside your head. One night, I woke up and found myself choking Mark.
This is before I knew I was pregnant.
One day, you'll get tired of it and leave me.
What about the baby?
You've asked the same question a million ways. You have a camaraderie with this child.
I'll have it. That's what you want to hear.
At least this child will know its father.
I will have it at the expense of my sanity.
They will take it out of me one day and put me away the next.
She lent me her new car for the trip to Providence, a guarantee that I would come back to visit her. She tugged at Brigitte's hat and kissed her forehead as I strapped Brigitte into the back seat.
You forgive me, don't you? She asked.
I leaned over and kissed her stomach.
It will be a beautiful baby, I said.
Don't call it a baby.
I kept seeing her face as I drove into the New England landscape. I knew the intensity of her nightmares. I had seen her curled up in a ball in the middle of the night, sweating and shaking as she hollered for the images of the past to leave her alone. Sometimes the fright woke her up, but most of the time I had to shake her awake before she bit her finger off, ripped her nightgown, or threw herself out of a window. After Joseph and I got married, all through the first year, I had suicidal thoughts. Some nights I woke up in a cold sweat, wondering if my mother's anxiety was somehow hereditary, or if it was something that I had caught from living with her. Her nightmares had somehow become my own, so much so that I would wake up some mornings wondering if we hadn't both spent the night dreaming about the same thing, a man with no face pounding a life into a helpless young girl. I looked back at my daughter, who was sleeping peacefully. It was a good sign that at least she slept a lot, perhaps a bit more than other children. The fact that she could sleep meant that she had no nightmares, and maybe would never become a frightened insomniac, like my mother and me. Chapter 30. I pulled into the driveway of our house shortly after noon. Joseph nearly fell down the steps as he rushed towards the car. I screeched to a halt, a few inches shy of crashing into him. He tapped on the back window, trying to get Brigitte's attention. She looked a bit disoriented when he raised her out of the seat. "And the child's mother, does she get a hug?" He pressed his lips down on mine.
"Bienvenue," he said. "Welcome back."
He ran up the steps with Brigitte, leaving me to carry my own bag. The sun shining through the window colored our wooden floors the hue of Haitian dirt. Joseph threw Brigitte up in the air, both of them laughing as he caught her.
"Tell Daddy all about Haiti," he said.
Brigitte pursed her wet lips as though she wanted to.
"Are you glad to see Daddy?"
He propped her up on the sofa. "Are you glad to see her, Mommy?" I asked, sitting next to him.
"It's nice to see you, but I want to kill you."
His free hand traveled up and down my blouse. "Did you miss me?" I asked.
"Sometimes."
The bedroom was messy. There were sheets piled on top of one another and pillows thrown randomly about. I held the sheets up to my face and sniffed them for another woman's scent. The mattress smelled like his socks.
"You see, I need you to put some order in my life," he said.
"You need a maid," I said. He twirled the duck mobile on the baby's crib, which we kept next to our bed.
"How was your trip?"
he asked. "My grandmother was preparing her funeral," I said. "It's a thing at home. Death is journey. My grandmother thinks she's at the end of hers."
"You called it home," he said. "Haiti."
"What else would I call it?"
"You have never called it that since we've been together. Home has always been your mother's house that you could never go back to."
I searched through the pile of dishes in the kitchen sink, trying to find a clean glass for a drink of water. In the nursery were the large drums he sometimes used in performance.
"I was calling the ancestral spirits, asking them to make you come back to me," he said.
Your prayers were answered. I went to the living room and crashed on the sofa. It suddenly occurred to me that I was surrounded by my own life, my own four walls, my own husband and child. Here I was, Sophie, maîtresse de la maison, not a guest or visiting daughter, but the mother, and sometimes more painfully, the wife.
"Will you deal with this, won't we?"
asked Joseph, pushing his tongue in my left ear.
"I need to know that we can get through all this."
In the living room was a fuzzy picture of a very fat me lying naked with a newborn on my chest. Joseph had been too excited to focus when we brought the baby home that first night. All I kept thinking was, thank God it was a cesarean section. The tearing from a natural birth would have totally destroyed me. I reached over and tapped Brigitte's nose.
"I need to know. Did you leave on impulse, or had you been planning to go for a long time?" he asked.
We weren't connecting physically.
"Did you find an aphrodisiac?"
"I don't need an aphrodisiac. I need a little more understanding."
"I do understand. You are usually reluctant to start, but after a while you give in. You seem to enjoy it."
I called Brigitte's pediatrician to make an appointment. I gave Brigitte her bath and laid her down, while Joseph tapped a few keys on his saxophone. I called my mother, but she did not pick up the phone. Her answering machine did not pick up either. I changed into a sweatsuit to go to bed. Joseph came to bed in a thick terry cloth robe.
"If our skins touch," he said, "I won't be able to resist you."
We held each other while trying to make out the plot of an old black-and-white movie. It was about lovers, a young girl and her painting instructor. At midnight, I called my mother. She sounded anxious when she answered. "What are you doing?" I asked. "Mark is here with me," she said. She told me she loved me and hung up the phone. Joseph rocked me in his arms while we listened to the cooing sounds Brigitte made in her sleep. "My mother is pregnant," I said.
"You'll finally have a sibling, a kindred spirit."
It felt better when I thought of it that way.
"Brigitte will be older than her aunt," he said. "Isn't that nice?"
Our pediatrician, Karen, was happy to see Brigitte. She was a middle-aged Indian woman who had seen me through my first weeks with Brigitte.
"Looks like you've lost weight," she said.
I held Brigitte's feet while she examined her. I nearly dropped to my knees with gratitude when she told me that Brigitte was okay.
"We'll follow the regular schedule for checkups," she said, filling out her chart.
"Only a mountain can crush a Haitian woman," I said.
"In that case, your daughter has proven herself a real Haitian woman," Karen said.
"Tell me how it was," she asked as I dressed Brigitte after the physical.
"You were going to the provinces, weren't you? There are warnings against all kinds of things in places like that."
"It's somewhat dry where I went. There are not a lot of swamps for malaria, or any of those things you warned me about. I was careful about the baby's water. We always boiled it for a long time."
"She looks good so far. But keep an eye on her, and call me if anything unusual happens. If you go to Haiti again any time soon, leave your angel behind. I'm not sure there's enough Haitian in her to survive another mountain."
I called Joseph from the hospital to tell him that everything was all right. When Brigitte and I came home, there was a large dinner waiting for us. Fried chicken, glazed potatoes, and broiled vegetables. Everything came frozen out of a box, but still managed to retain some flavor. We decided to start giving Brigitte a few more adventurous solids. I pureed some sweet potatoes and boiled some carrots and fed her small spoonfuls. I ate everything on my plate, forcing myself to resist the urge to purge my body. After dinner, I called my mother.
When are you going to come and have dinner with Mark and me?
I have to bring back your car, I said. How's the baby?
Good,
I said. How's yours?
Don't call it that, she said. I haven't decided if I will follow through.
It's fighting me, though.
More and more of a fighter every day.
Is Mark there?
Yes, but he can sleep, and I can't.
I'm watching television.
I don't know. It's really hard.
You know what happens now.
I look at every man and I see him.
Mark?
No, no, she whispered. Him. Le violeur.
The rapist.
I see him everywhere.
Have you told Mark?
He thinks my body is in shock from getting pregnant.
You should tell someone.
You cannot report a ghost to the police.
Joseph's hands were creeping up my arm and going through the top of my nightgown.
I tried to get rid of it, she said, today. But they wanted me to think about it for 24 hours. When I thought of taking it out, it got more horrifying. That's when I began seeing him over and over. That man who raped me.
We'll come and visit you this weekend, I said.
I want Joseph to meet Mark.
I felt his other hand creeping up my thighs, his hair smelling like aftershave as his face approached mine.
Mama, I have to go, I said. We'll visit.